This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
We officially welcome in our 1320 Kings insider, creator of the Kings Beat, and baseball fan, our man James Hamm. James, as we shift gears here to the Sacramento Kings, we're just about 4 weeks away from the NBA draft. We'll discuss this all together because I'm curious your thoughts on this, James. You've made a lot of mock drafts in your day. And I've noticed something over the last few weeks that I'm just curious to get your opinion on. I try to pay attention because the Kings are drafting, you know, later than we're used to. So I really kind of look at 20 through 26 through these different drafts, through different publications, different writers to see who they have slotted in those areas and to see how similar those six or seven picks are with each other. Like, is it the same group of players all kind of right there in that area? And one thing I noticed, Hammer, is like this week, and I get we're 4 weeks away from the draft. Were like five different drafts that had Chris Murray at 24. And it's like, okay, are you telling me he's the consensus number 24 pick in this draft? Or is this just kind of a lazy, hey, we're 4 weeks away, let's make a little cute story? Because all of them include a line something similar to, he'll probably go higher. But for this version of the draft, I'm going to put him in at 24. Like, is this, like, James, explain the mock draft process to me so I don't throw my computer the next time I see Chris Murray at 24. By the way, this has nothing to do with Chris Murray. It just has to do with, okay, we're at the 24th pick of the draft, and everyone thinks Chris Murray is coming to Sacramento, huh? Okay.
Yeah, I really do think that there's a huge void left right now in the draft world. Because there aren't nearly the quality of people that are writing mock drafts that there used to be. And
some of them are working in front offices now.
Well, that's the deal. Like, yeah. I mean, when you lose Draft Express as like the primary when they sold to ESPN, that was a big hit. But then when ESPN absorbed, you know, Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz, they at least had those guys on board, right? But then Mike Schmitz left and became the assistant general manager for the Portland Trailblazers. Mike is the guy. He is the guy. He has been for like 5 or 6 years in the draft world. He's the guy who's at every one of these Nike AAU camps. He's the one that travels the world to scout prospects everywhere. He's really, really good at what he does. And to lose him in that space was a huge, huge loss for basketball fans. Hmm. And then the next guy on the list after really Mike Schmitz, because I don't even really consider Jonathan Givony as part of that. He's the guy who financed and built Draft Express. But after that, he really relied on the talent of guys like Mike, who's the one who did the original videos. Like, if you remember, Draft Express was the best of the best of the best with their draft coverage videos. And all of that was Mike Schmitz. So the next step is Sam Vecenie from the Athletic, and he's tremendous. And then after that, there's a steep drop off. And so what we're doing here with mock drafts is exactly that. I mean, during the shutdown, right? So we hit the pandemic, the early parts of the pandemic, before the Tyrese Halliburton draft. I want to say 11 mock drafts. Maybe it was more. Maybe it was like 21 mock drafts, like during that time. And you got to come up with something every 2 to 4 weeks. Your boss wants it. They're the only thing driving any traffic to the site. You know, I did something like 80 million page views during the lockdown in mock drafts. And a lot of that is, you know, diving deeper and deeper and deeper into each one of these prospects, their videos, getting as much resources as you can on them. But that's not everyone. Not everybody has a scouting eye. Not everybody, like a lot of it's copycat. A lot of it's just guys looking at the other mock drafts and moving guys around off of those boards. You know, our friend Brett Huff, I think, does a tremendous job of doing what he calls a consensus board, where it has basically every single one of the major mock drafts he's pulling, and he puts them into a spreadsheet and like basically comes up with an equation to rate each of the prospects and put them in like a consensus, like what everyone kind of is saying. So when it comes to Chris Murray and the Kings, I do think a lot of it's just lazy, just straight up. You know, Chris Murray's probably going to go number 16, 17, 18 in the draft. It's possible he falls to 24, but even if he does, I'm not even sure the Kings take him. And that, again, that's not a knock on Chris Murray. The fact is they already have Keegan, and Keegan and Chris, while they're different players, they're still identical twins. They still have the same exact body type. Neither one of them is a gigantic leaper. They're not super athletes. They're really, really smart, good, high quality players, but they're very similar. And the Kings need something different at that 24 spot. If they're going to stay there, they need a long, athletic leaper that's defensive minded, that, you know, really is a like more of a 3-and-D 3 or a 3-and-D 4 or a 3-4 combo. And I guess you could squint and like say, okay, maybe I can see Chris Murray as that player, but there are other options that I think fit the bill better. And so I do believe that it's kind of lazy to get back to your original question after a long segue there. But yeah, if that makes sense.
No, it does.
Yeah. How difficult is it to, you know, do these mock drafts after probably the lottery? Like, it's already kind of tough enough in the back half of the lottery, but 24, I mean, there's so many different variables and different scenarios. Guys that can be drafted, guys that could be traded, picks that we could trade it. I mean, that seems like a tough task. And to be honest with you, I say that to say, I could see somebody maybe being lazy with it because like, all right, like I don't really know what's going to happen after 15. Well, because Chris Murray is there. The Kings kind of, all right, okay. Mm-hmm. At least I have a story to tell at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, 24 is kind of tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you bring up like even the top 15. And, you know, we just saw a report yesterday from Wasserman, I believe, that Bilal Coulibaly has a promise in the top 14. So, I mean, that's a guy who realistically is slated in most mock drafts to go between like 25 and 35. Not all the way up there. And there's always like lottery busters. You know, you have the Josh Primos of the world who jump up out of nowhere and slide into the lottery where no one expected. And they're like, there's countless players that are like that, right? That, you know, guys like Noah Vonleh who are around 19, 20, move all the way up to, you know, the night before the draft, people say he could go to number 4 and then he falls like number 11 or 12. Like there are all of these draft stories that happen. This draft in particular, I'm just going to say like from 15 to like 40, it's so wide open. And it really does depend on like just what you're interested in, what as a team you value, what you have as needs. And I think that's when I'm doing mock drafts, and I have done so many mock drafts, I don't even know. But I'll tell you that, like I try to do things like my own way. So I really look at team needs. So I scout all of their salary structure. You know, I look at all of their minutes played from the years before and I match like what is their weaknesses, what are their pluses, and then I try to find players that I think fit those when I'm doing mocks. So if I'm doing mocks, I break it down into like a player profile, what he looks like, what he can do as a player, and then what team needs are, and then how that player fits into those needs. And that's usually how I do it. And those things change, you know, they change throughout. Like when you talk about the lottery comes out, like that's your mock draft should shake up substantially, because now you have the true sort of the draft placements in their true order. So now I know that, you know, if I'm looking at even like go all the way up to the number two pick, Brandon Miller might make more sense than Scoot Henderson at number two, because Charlotte has LaMelo Ball, and you know, they might not need a true point guard. They might need someone different. They might need a small forward. So, or a power forward, whatever you want to put Brandon Miller as. So like all of these things change throughout, especially once the lottery comes out, and then it's fine tuning, especially down the last 2 weeks, you're hearing a ton of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I'm always hearing a ton of stuff there. They're like, I mentioned it to you guys before, like I've heard like crazy things come out of the combines about specific players that you're just like, boy, that just makes you're scratching your head. Like, what in the world does that even mean? And then guys plummet, and then you know why. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult because you're looking at these things from like a million miles away. And, you know, there are some guys like, again, there's some really, really good mock draft guys that are calling every single, they're calling the prospects trainer at their school. So they have a list of not only, you know, the head coach at a specific college, but maybe a couple of assistants and then maybe a trainer. And they'll get a really good package. Some of them will go back to their high school coaches and they'll really dive into like what this kid was like in high school, how hard of a worker he was, whether he showed up to practice, whether he was a good teammate, all of these things, and they try to package them up. And then there's the other thing, like we talked about the other day with a guy that you love, Kenny. You know, there are players that they go to four different high schools or five different high schools, and then they go to prep school, and then they switch colleges three times. And it's like, if you've ever hired people and fired people, you know that when you get an employee that's had four jobs and it's, you know, like June, they've already had four jobs that year, that if you hire them, you're going to have them for like 2 weeks and then they're leaving, they're going somewhere else. So like, that's a problem. You want some sort of commitment level from your prospects. And that, because that comes in, like if someone's willing to give up on a college or a high school experience after a year, or someone's in their ear telling them to move from this college, this high school to this high school, or this college to this college, none of that's good. That means that they have bad outside people giving them bad advice. They have all kinds of needs that you might not be able to fit as a franchise. And players like that usually get to a certain point and then they're ready to go somewhere else because they don't want to do the work or they don't want to listen to you anymore. And they're so used to just giving up on the process and going somewhere else. So like it's pretty heavy, and these are multi-million dollar decisions. I mean, that decision at number two is probably, it could mean $100 to $200 million in franchise valuation 3 years from now, if one of them hits and one of them doesn't. That's huge.
Yeah. Have you ever in your conversations with Monty McNair kind of dove into what his process is at this time of year? Or Wes?
Yeah. Like between the two of them, between the conversations that I have, a lot of like what I get from them is they prefer to go with what they know. Like there's speculation and like prognosticating what a prospect might do is one thing, but these guys really do like to center on what can I guarantee or what do I really think a prospect can do, and not put some pie in the sky expectations. Again, it's Keegan Murray over Jaden Ivey or Shaedon Sharpe. You know who Keegan Murray is. You know what the floor is, and you hope you know what the ceiling is. He might push the ceiling, but he's not going to go below the floor that you think you've set. And I'd even say this, his rookie season, that's his floor as a player. 12 points, 5 rebounds, you know, like steals, blocks, assists, everything else. That's the floor, but also a 40% three-point shooter. So where can he go from there? You know, that's going to depend on the work he puts in. It's going to depend on the system. It's going to depend on the players that are around him and whether they're better than him or not, if you go out and get a player that's better than, say, Harrison Barnes in status, then Keegan Murray might not develop quite as fast or become quite as high a score as you think he would. But if, you know, if you don't and you bring in a couple of defensive minded guys to fill Harrison Barnes' spot, if Harrison's not back, then all of a sudden Keegan Murray becomes much like higher profile player in your rotation. He's going to get more touches. So I think when it comes to like this group, look at the players they've drafted. Davion Mitchell, again, like 22, 23 year old, 4 year player in college. Keegan Murray was an old sophomore, but you know, 22, I think he's 21 when he's drafted, but turned 22 early. And then Tyrese Halliburton, who was a sophomore coming out of his sophomore season, all of them were very, very good and productive college players. And that's something that I think that this team and this group of executives, they value highly, because worst case scenario, you know that you're getting like this level of player. You might not get this level of player, but you're also not going to get a player who's out of the league in 2 years. You're not going to get a Yorgos Papayannis that, you know, doesn't even last a full two seasons in the NBA. And, you know, it seems like how long ago Yorgos Papayannis was drafted by the Kings. I just looked. He's still 25 years old, playing in Greece, and will be in the championship game against Sasha Vezenkov. 25 years old. Can't miss like that.
That's amazing. He's 25 years old.
Jeez. I would have never thought that. I mean, I wouldn't have thought he was 40, but I wouldn't have thought 25.
I wouldn't have thought about him if James hadn't brought him up, to be honest with you. And I mean.
He was drafted before De'Aaron.
That's so
what was he,
brutal.
18 when he was drafted?
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. And hey, he's developed. And, you know, if you look at the trajectory of Sasha Vezenkov, if Papayannis gets an opportunity in Greece to become like a primary on his team, like Sasha did, like he could bump those stats up to 17 points and 12 rebounds and two blocks. Like, it's still there. He's still a huge man, you know, he's still mobile. He just didn't fit what the Kings were doing. And he was kind of surly and wasn't easy to get along with.
Papayannis was one of the only players I remember like that I've since like covering the Kings or covering basketball where I watched him and was like, he looks lost. Like he genuinely doesn't look like he knows what to do when he's out there on the basketball floor. I don't think I've watched a player like that before or since. Like he just looked confused to me.
I remember years ago, I went down to watch a Warriors game, and it was early in the season, and they had just drafted Michael Pietrus, and he was coming out of France, and that you're watching him on the court. They were doing warm-ups with him. They're doing sort of the run-through like they do with every player, and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, that guy wouldn't make a high school team. He was so bad, and he turns out to be like a really, really good role player in the NBA. Someone who you had to spend a lot of time developing, and they spent the time, they spent the energy, and the payout was huge. But those initial times were like, holy smokes. And then with a guy like Papayannis, what happened there is, you know, he barely played on his European team because he was so young. And he might have played in U16 or U18 or U19, whatever, and you saw a little bit of him. And then you watched him shoot a bunch of shots, and you watched him rebound when he's doing like one-on-zero work, right? And you thought, oh, man, all of this looks really good. He's great. You know, I think Enes Kanter put up one of the great, like one-on-O workouts that we've ever seen. Like that video of him working out was like, holy cow, this guy's going to be a superstar. And he moves all the way up to what, number two in the draft, number three in the draft. The point though is that like you need these guys to work out. You need them to run up against players. And you know, the whole Dave Yeager workout with De'Aaron Fox, it's always drawn so much curiosity. Like if you can't get a player to go up against somebody, then you better be creative about how you assess them. And Yeager had De'Aaron blindfolded and had him run through drills blindfolded to see how he did and to see how he reacted. And they're like, oh, man.
That's kind of crazy.
Dave was watching Instagram basketball trainer videos.
I don't know. You know, like
hitting him with them wiggly sticks that you get in the pool. Like, hey, what are you doing?
Well, remember like the 2010 draft? No, the 2009 draft, Tyreek Evans, right? So Tyreek Evans has this workout of all workouts. It's him, Steph Curry, Brandon Jennings, and Johnny Flynn.
Yeah.
I think that was the four that came into Sacramento. They like killed each other in workouts. They're going at each other. It's like this great workout. And then you realize that Tyreek Evans was a 6'6" grown man and everyone else was like 6 foot tall and weighed like 130 pounds. And he just blew everybody away. But the reason I bring him up is in that same draft, Ricky Rubio refused to work out for anyone. Mm. Right. And so Ricky Rubio was going to be a number one or number two pick. I think Blake Griffin's the number one pick in that draft.
That's right. Yep.
Rubio is supposed to go number two, but he falls all the way to either number five or number six. I'm not sure because Minnesota had pick five and six back to back. And that's where they spent him on, of course, 2 point guards. And I think they drafted 4 point guards that year, including Ty Lawson and like Nick Calathes. That 5 and 6 pick, it's just wild because no one had seen Rubio, like he wouldn't work out for anyone. And then he comes to Sacramento and, you know, he goes out to dinner and like his mom's cutting a steak when they're out to dinner. And the Kings were just concerned that he was just really, really young and immature. And then he got drafted and he didn't come over. They had to wait for him for a year. It just a whole bunch of crazy in that year, but that's what you're dealing with in the NBA draft process. You're dealing with parents, you're dealing with players who have, you know, they're on their eighth stop in 2 weeks and they're just dog tired and they're going up against the same dude that they went up against before. I always tell, like, Tobias Harris would come in at like 220 and he was working out going one-on-one against Tyler Honeycutt at 165. But they were both small forwards, so you were using them as comps to go against each other. Well, they went against each other like 7 times during the draft process. You know, what do you do? Tobias Harris outweighed the kid by 60 pounds. So one of them goes like number 19 or 20 in the draft. The other one falls to the second round. God bless his soul. You know, there's a lot of weird stuff that happens during the draft process.
Can I follow-ups so they'll be lost? One, I'm happy to hear Yorgos Papayannis has developed. Like, I wasn't trying to insult him. Like, I'm happy to hear he's developed and he's playing well and, like, good for him. Still look lost on an NBA floor, but good for him.
Oh, yeah.
Two, you mentioned the cutting up his steak, and it just sparked the question. If you order, like, a filet, you're cutting like a piece at a time, right? Like you're not cutting the whole thing all at once, are you?
Oh no, I think his mom took the plate and cut it up like into little cubes for him and handed it back to him.
So like that's, but the, like,
she wasn't to like me, slicing and no, beating see, him.
To me, no, I got you. But to me, that not even having his mom do it, just cutting the steak up all at once is a red flag.
That I agree with that too.
The steak should be cut
as you
one piece at a time.
Yeah. Like, it's not even that his mom's cutting it.
It's not that his mom's doing it. It's
frustrated by the way he cut it.
No, that really
it's cooling. Ridiculous. You don't want the whole thing cold.
You you don't cut the whole steak at once. You cut a piece and then you eat it. And then you cut another piece and then you eat it.
Yeah. Hey, and like, look, Ricky Rubio is a very good NBA player for a long
time. Oh, absolutely.
Still in the league.
But there's this, you know, even throughout his career, there's a little bit of just him being a little on the soft side. And that's, I think, what the Kings saw. And you're looking at if you make the wrong pick at four, it's millions and millions of dollars that you've wasted. Look at the Thomas Robinson thing. Ooh. The Kings had to bail on him before the NBA trade deadline in his rookie season.
Damn.
I mean, he literally was just trash as an NBA player. And the guy that went the next pick was Damian Lillard. I mean, you can't make those types of mistakes, and you have to have guys in your gym. And again, Thomas Robinson, for what I know, never worked out for the Kings at all, where Damian Lillard came in and hit like 99 out of 100 shots, and they just couldn't stop gushing. They loved him, and then they didn't take him. And again, there's reasons why they didn't. And you had just drafted Jimmer the year before, and you drafted Isaiah Thomas with the last pick, and both of them, you know, you had hopes for still. And he was going to be a point guard. Lillard was a point guard, but just think of how much that changed the franchise trajectory. If you had Damian Lillard and DeMarcus Cousins as young players growing together and in their heyday, and Damian Lillard coming in as a very, very mature, like 4-year player, that was, you know, what, Lehigh? No, that's CJ McCollum. What's that?
Weber State.
Yeah, Weber State. Yeah. So what you're getting was like a really, really mature, like 22-year-old player coming in that would have been able to step in and play major minutes right away. It's just, you just can't make mistakes like that when you're a team or a franchise like the Kings.
Well, thankfully, those mistakes are over and the Kings championships are on the way. We'll come back. We'll talk more with our 1320 Kings insider, James Hamm, when dealing with Casey. Brought to you by Sky River Casino, returns here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
D'Lo and KC continues streaming live on the Odyssey app.
We welcome everybody back. I'm struggling, man. I'm so.
We're back.
I was like, I muted the mic real quick because I was like, okay, get a good voice clear and let's do this. It's like, man, this is it. This could be
the last edition.
It's the last edition of D'Lo and KC ever. The voice is just decided. I've had the voice is Jimmy Butler right now. It's Jimmy Butler at the end of the bubble finals.
Disappeared.
He's just, well, there's that too. I wasn't going that harsh, James. Jeez.
Oh, man.
Did that game last night go the way you expected?
Absolutely. I'll even tell you this, like, I haven't done my prize picks in a while, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to do a prize picks for this first game of the finals. They did like a deal with Jokic where it was like, if he scores over 0.5, he's one. So I did a 6 pick. I went under on Jimmy Butler at 26.5. And he scored what, 13. I went over on Kyle Lowry at like 12.5. It was way less than that. It was 7.5. And he ends up scoring like 10. All of them, I hit every single one of a 6 pick except for Michael Porter, who was at 15.5. And all I needed was one basket. And if you go back and watch that fourth quarter, he bricks a corner three. He attacks the basket, goes all the way up to dunk it, and then bounces it down to Jokic, who gets fouled. Like one time after another, right at the last second, he went up for a layup and got blocked. And I ended up I won $50, but I would have won $625 if it wasn't for Michael Porter coming up a point and a half short.
Damn.
That's tough. That's tough. The real question, James, is how many times did you yawn during that game?
Stop it. Will you stop?
What's the over for under on that one?
I thought it was fine. Like it's
This
series is boring, James. And I love hoop. I love Jokic. I love Jimmy Butler. I love Coach Spo. Bam, all these guys. This series has no pizzazz whatsoever. Oh. So far at least.
I don't know, man.
One game into it. Overreaction Caraway.
One game. I mean, you look at the Boston series and the pizzazz of that series.
Oh, that
Miami
was one of the
should
great
be able to
conference
do,
finals of all time.
Miami, well, it's the same team. One of the teams, the better team, is in the finals. So no, they
the
should
Nuggets
be fine.
Are,
I mean,
the Nuggets are the best team in basketball. It's not about how good they are. They're just, this whole thing is just boring.
Well, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good stuff. You should probably do Prize Picks. And so you're sitting there screaming at the TV like everyone else. Yeah.
I do. Before we get into business with James Hamm,
mm-hmm. The business of basketball.
The business of basketball. yesterday we were gushing all over that adorable picture of Keegan Murray holding De'Aaron Fox's son. Did you see it? You hadn't seen it?
I didn't see it.
Oh, you've got it. You've got to see it, James.
Oh, Resay.
Is it on the gram?
No,
it's on. It originated from the gram. Yes, but it's on Twitter.
Yeah, Who clipped it and put it up? I'll go find it.
I don't know,
James.
Jill,
it's virtually impossible to not
Jill has
find
it on her
at this
timeline.
Point. It's on Jill's mine. It's pretty much everywhere.
It's just an adorable picture. But the when you see it, you'll go oh. When you see it, but. I talked
Rain
about...
giving Keegan the look Ryan gave me the first time I held her.
Oh, yeah. I got it. I see it. Yeah, the head tilt. Yeah.
So, yeah. I saw it yesterday, and I mentioned, like, those are the type of moments that I don't know if endure a team to a fan base is the right word. But it does. Like, it's like, oh, man, this is a family. Like, this is so cool, this team and the connection they have with each other, and they're connected with the city and all this other stuff. And I know it's real easy to say, you know, how close the team is because they won. But is this the closest team that you've been around with the Kings? Were there teams that didn't perform well, but they were really close, got along really well, you know, had a good energy, they just didn't win? Is this the closest team you've been around?
Yeah, I think it is. I think that there for the last couple of years, it's been building towards like a really good culture. And I think a lot of that is that a lot of the young players that you had kind of grew up together and now they are a certain age. But I've talked about this so many times where like almost every player on this team walked into the season like 24, 25, 26. They're all in the same basic like spot in life. Right. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them are having kids or just had kids. Remember, Harrison Barnes had a little girl, I think, 2.5 years ago. And then I was surprised. Sabonis's little dude is 14 months old, which just tells you how fast time goes by. I mean, that's crazy that he's already 14 months because he, you know, they had him right after Domas got traded to Sacramento. So I think it's really cool that all of them are in sort of the same spot. And what that does is, and again, I'll say this again, all the assistant coaches, all of them have little kids. The front office, you know, Wes's kids are a little bit older, but, you know, Monty has like 3 kids under the age of 5 or 6 now, probably. There's one daycare with 13 kids from the Kings that all go to the same daycare. And what that does is that all of your support staff, your wives, they and girlfriends, they all have friends. They all have people who are in similar situations that, you know, if you need an emergency, someone needs to pick your kids up from school, you've got all these people to call. You've got, you know, it's a real family atmosphere. And so, yeah, I think like culturally, everyone gets along. Like it's Like, it feels good. It's a good vibe inside the locker room. They're messing with each other. It's a little different than it used to be. We used to have a lot more time where six or seven guys are in the locker room, you know, together, like just hanging out and, you know, yapping back and forth at each other. And so you get a little bit more of the personality. Now it's usually like one or two guys in the locker room at a time. But overall, I think that this is a very, very good tight-knit group, and they're only going to get closer as time goes by, especially with when you factor in the little kids that are growing up with these guys.
What about
that? Go ahead.
My bad. I was just going to say, what about the scores?
No, the scores, I mean, because you had some big personalities on that kind of pulled guys together, and there was like a fun hoop world that was going on there. But like, let's not act like there weren't guys in that locker room that didn't get along or that had personal issues off the court or had issues between their dads or any of that stuff. Like, there were some things that were going on with that group where it kind of kept them from being as good as they probably, they were way better than they should have been. I guess that would be the first thing.
Kenny's and blocked this, out the Marvin Bagley era, apparently.
Well, and I'll also tell you this, like, the scores, it's such a great story, but, you know, let's not forget that Iman Shumpert was traded at the trade deadline and that, like, and it was time. Like, they're like, things were good and then they maybe weren't as good. And then he doesn't go on to go play for, you know, three or four more years and become a, you know, a big player on some other team. That was pretty much his last hurrah. He went to, where did he go in that trade?
Houston.
Yeah.
It was Houston. He was, because they played Houston the day he was traded.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. He was. I think we were watching to see what bench he was going to sit on. And I don't remember which one it was.
Wait.
I think there was a three team. Maybe he was traded to Cleveland.
Well, that's no. Cleveland is where George Hill went that year.
Oh, okay.
And that's where Iman came from.
Because Alec.
Yeah, he came from Cleveland.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, no. Yeah. So it was a year before they traded George Hill to Cleveland. They got Iman Shumpert back, who had one more year left at like 15 or 11 million bucks or something. And then at the trade deadline, they did deal him. They dealt him away. And like, from my point of view, like, I thought it was a good vibe. It was fun. A lot of the players were really, really young. So what they had was like a ringleader as opposed to like what we see now where a bunch of guys are like the same age. So
a ringleader, like, and Shump was the ringleader.
Yeah. Shump was like the big dominant voice in the locker room.
Yeah.
And a big dominant voice that would do like incredible Eddie Murphy laughs and stuff. And none of the players had any idea what he was doing. They had no idea who Eddie Murphy was because they're all so young. So he would do these voices, or he would do the Coming to America stuff. And all of us are laughing in the media and they're like, and Buddy would come over to like, do you know what he's doing there? He's like, I have no idea.
I wouldn't get along with none of them dudes, man. Like, I love Eddie Murphy. I wouldn't get along with none of them dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
Keegan Holden Rain is an all-timer.
Oh, that's a hell of a picture. Shout out to Rosé for capturing that picture and sending it to the internet, because that is just the perfect look from Rain. Like, yeah. I'll find the picture of me and Ryan, and you see, like, that must just be the baby look when inexperienced men hold them. Like, yo, get me away from this idiot right here. This dude about to drop me, Mom. Will you please get me back from him?
It's very possible.
Get me back from a barf on his jacket. That's what Ryan was saying.
The straight face of Keegan. He's just like... Yeah, I got to meet Baby Rain near the end of the season. So, beautiful little dude.
Yeah. Here's this is the look I got.
Oh, yeah.
That's the look I got. Get this idiot away from me. I think that's right when she made that. That's when she made the noise that scared me. I was like, hey, Jazz.
Look at this.
Jazz. Come Jazz.
You know what stands out right away?
Your baby's broken.
What stands out right away is D'Lo is that dude who plays shortstop on the softball field wearing all white. And you're just like, bro, I know if I hit the ball 3 feet to your left or 3 feet to your right, there ain't no way you're going to get down to go get it. You ain't going down to go get the ball, so I'm just going to hit right around you while you stand there and look pretty at shortstop.
Hit the Carl Lewis. He said, uh-oh.
You got that all white, like, bro, don't wear all white to go see a baby. Come on.
It was at this point we both knew we were in trouble.
That's right. Next time you wear the green flannel, yep, that will hide that stuff, man. You even got like big pockets there. Baby throws up in your pocket. Oh. It's okay. It's in the pocket. I still look good.
That's fine. Only a 10-hour day live at Sky River Casino ahead.
That's right. Oh, that's
Rain
right.
Had the same look. Baby Rain had the same look.
It's just the universal. It's the universal. This dude does not know what he's doing. Look from babies.
That's right. That's right.
Baby. Man.
Kenny.
I love babies. Baby. Bring the babies. I'll hold the babies. I don't care. I love the babies.
Kenny brought up earlier this week something we hadn't really thought about before. I don't think we've discussed this with you, James. Do you see a realistic scenario where Alex Lynn is back with this team?
I don't. And that's not because I think Alex is a horrible player. I just, number one, he doesn't fit the system. Number two, at some point, you have to actually give Namias Keita a shot. And like, if you're going to go with a big boy to back up Sabonis, that's why I've kind of pushed the idea of, you know, I like Trey Lyles. I like Trey Lyles as a small ball five. I like Namias Keita as a third center with the potential to be more down the road. He's a kid that you draft, you put some time and energy into, and then next thing you know, he comes in second in the MVP balloting. He's all G League, you know, first team defense, all G League first team, as sort of like all NBA stuff. Like, he really does. He's taken steps that you expect. Like, if you're going to draft a guy, you're going to put time and energy into him, you're going to hope he develops. He's done it. He's checked all the boxes, right? So at some point, you're going to have to give him an opportunity. And so, like, why? I'm just not sure with Alex. I think Alex could very well, like, go back to Europe. I think there's possible he ends up on a roster as, like, again, a third center. And he was a pro the whole year. He went through a lot the whole year with the Ukrainian stuff. His dad was missing for some time. You know, he was like weeks and weeks without knowing where, like literally where his father was, whether he had like had to evacuate and move to Russia or like all kinds of crazy stuff. So I would check in on him all the time in the locker room just to make sure he knew that like we weren't just going to ignore him and act like he wasn't there. But he also, he had moments where he was okay on the court and could he help somebody? Yeah, I think so. I just think that it kind of ran its course. You know, I don't think that there's a reason to bring him back, in my opinion.
I only brought it up because I just wondered if maybe, because some of the things that you would say when you would talk to him, I don't want to take for granted that, you know, he wasn't playing. I'm sure he wanted to play every night, you know, but it seemed like he was accepting of his role. He was okay with it. And I remember you saying all the time, he's just like thankful that he's in the league, that, you know, that he's a part of something, that, you know, he's a part of a team like this. And then you got to the end of the season where he was actually playing, and then he was like playing well. He was contributing. He played in the playoffs, you know, played some minutes. And I just wondered if maybe he could come back maybe in the same exact role, like a guy that probably will go 15 to 16 games straight without playing, maybe play one or two games, then back to not playing for, you know, 10 games. And if you have the right matchup, if you're in a bit of a pinch, he can come in there and give you some minutes and be accepting of that. So that's kind of where it came from. And I would figure that type of person would be relatively cheap. I agree. You want to see what you have with Keita, but I always looked at Keita as probably being the backup center in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right. Like, there could be a spot for him, but I think that the one thing that we always do anytime we discuss, like, the backup center position, number one, we don't even bring up Chimezie Metu. And number two, we completely omit Rashawn Holmes. Mm-hmm. You got 2 years of $25 million left to Rashawn Holmes.
Like, but James, he didn't play this year.
Well, I totally agree, but maybe there's a way that he spends a summer working in Sacramento and working his way into the good graces of Mike Brown and finds a way to be impactful and help a team.
Well, I mean, I'd love that. I mean, wouldn't that be the best? Yeah. Wouldn't that be the best scenario for everyone involved?
And you know, the crazy thing about it is, I know there was the time late in the season where he didn't look good at all. Mm-hmm. But I think the only other time I remember him playing was that Lakers game.
Yeah.
Where he was able to perform, he was able to do something. So, yeah, James, I mean, maybe they all come sit down and come together and be like, last year was crazy.
Throw it away.
How do we make this work? And maybe.
Yeah, there was a point early in the season when he played like a handful of games in a row. I remember him going up against Weissman and in one of the Golden State games in the first like 2 weeks of the season. And so they did give him an opportunity. It just didn't work out, and it wasn't going to work out, and the style of play wasn't going to work out. And then every time he came in the last half of the season, he shot and hit three-point shots. And you're just like, man, and man, there is not a more strange – well, the Kings like own the market on the strangest three-point shots in the league, and that's Matthew Dellavedova, which I don't even know what that was. It hurt me to watch. And then Rashawn Holmes does this weird thing where his hands like behind the ball and underneath the ball, and he kind of cups it weird, and then he throws a full like knuckleball at the rim and it goes in, and you're like, okay, well, you've done that a whole bunch of times. Like, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to mess with it because you at least know how to hit it. Yeah, but it was sad to see him like be a shell of the player that he was before. And I don't understand why they couldn't have found a way to work him out, especially when that's one of the types of players that you needed on this roster. You needed a Brandon Clark type player. And the fact that he was never able to really like step into that role and provide some energy and spark and, you know, and some, you know, wide open alley-oop dunks. Like, you got Malik Monk running alley-oop layup lines with Chimezie Metu and everyone else on the team, but Rashawn Holmes, who's one of the best alley-oop guys in the league, can't figure it out. I was very confused by what happened.
One thing that obviously the scenario is perfect. I love the idea. One concerning aspect to it is, James, it's like you could throw out last year if you want to, but it's been like 2 years now. Because of what happened with Rashawn the year before. It's been 2 years since he's really, really played basketball.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, and in that time...
Well, I mean, he's played. Yeah. I mean, obviously he's practicing and all that. But I mean, like, as part of games and rotations and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, realistically, the best case scenario, you said, wouldn't that be the best case? The best case scenario is that you find him a place where he can reset his career and start over. And, you know, I don't know if that job is out there. Because we talk about Alex Len... You know, is there a $2.6 million minimum scale spot on a roster for his years of service for Alex Len? Maybe, but that's the problem with Alex. Like, if you're looking at a $4 million contract this last year, it's really not that much. You're not saving that much to bring him back like $2.6 million when you can get Kata for way cheaper than that, or at least a couple hundred thousand cheaper than that. And when it comes to Rashawn, like, how do you reset? He's owed $25 million. Like, the only way he's either going to be traded as just cap filler in a trade, or you're going to have to give up something to get rid of his contract, or he's going to go somewhere, or he's going to get bought out in Sacramento or bought out somewhere else, and then have to go reset and find his way back into the league that way. And it's tough because he's, you know, everything that, while I've been around him, he's a good dude. He's got a good family as far as parents and brothers and all that stuff. He had the off the court stuff, but I think he just needs a full-fledged reset and like a reboot somewhere else.
Yeah. No off the court stuff, by the way, that worked out in his favor.
Mm-hmm. It did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did.
Which is good.
But in his favor, but
he had like to go through it. Yeah, knows. Your point was that he had to go through it.
Well, yeah, but that's, you also have to know that like he's got a 6-year-old, so that experience isn't over, and that's going to, you know, he shares that child with someone else for the next 12 years until they're 18, but maybe even longer than that, because, you know, they're your child. So those situations, they feel like they go away. They don't go away.
James it's cutting his kids off at 18. Like, hey, my contract was for 18 years. Y'all are, I'm about to have one giant bedroom upstairs and a bar downstairs. So y'all keep it moving.
Figure it out.
That's right. I'm going to need a bigger bar.
I like that. I like that. Make sure you check out all of James's amazing work over at the Kings Beat. .com. Become a subscriber over there. Yet better yet, become a premium subscriber over there. Make sure you head over to the Kings Beat YouTube channel as well. You could subscribe to the Kings Beat podcast with James and Brendan Nunez and Sean Cunningham as well. Of course, you can get that podcast wherever you get podcasts from. Check out our conversation with Ty Dolla $ign on the latest episode of Corners of the Culture. Available again wherever you get podcasts from. And most importantly, have a wonderful weekend. If you're listening on ESPN 1320 or the Odyssey app and you want more Kings talk, you want more D'Lo and KC, don't go anywhere. We'll run it back next year on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Go Giants.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.